check the stats.
So we have.
Board members, if you return.
I can't believe that they didn't have my orange too.
Patrick, I'm sorry, Patricia, do you have?
Did you call me somebody else?
No. No, he called me ma'am.
I know when I'm with.
All right, if we could go on, please. First person up for public comment is it Scott Anderson from NIMS?
Yeah, I'm Scott Anderson from National Marine Fisheries Service, representing the Federal Caucus today. Chairman Bernat and board members, Federal Services appreciate the board and the DNR's work toward the long-term goal of fish habitat water typing model and map. Development of a water typing model map will take time. Therefore, robust field procedures to accurately delineate fish habitat are needed more immediately. Water typing decisions based on a demonstration of fish absence are not consistent with the permanent approaches agreed to in the Forest Practice HCP. Water typing methods based on physical stream characteristics are practical means to delineate overwintering habitats and recoverable habitats currently unoccupied by fish. We believe that the common assertions that physical criteria overestimate fish habitat are based on studies done only during low water conditions. We recommend development of a system that minimizes the use of fish presence, limiting that tool to determination of fish presence above features most likely not passable by fish, replacing the current system in which the location of the last detected fish informs habitat. We recommend revising the fish present detection methods to dovetail with the updated habitat assessment methods to ensure that fish detection procedures reliably indicate the long-term likelihood of fish use. We recommend careful quality assurance procedures to determine the best uses for various data sets. We caution against calibrating a new water typing system only using data sets that are seasonal and spatially limited and dependent on a single electrofishing survey. While there is additional research to be identified in the course of developing water typing procedures, we believe there is enough information to improve operating procedures now. We understand that additional information may help to improve procedures into the future. In closing, we value work to implement the Forest Practice Habitat Conservation Plan through DNR rulemaking. We look forward to working with the board and the DNR directly in developing field procedures for type F streams or DNR seeking our concurrence on significant adaptive management actions affecting the Forest Practice Habitat Conservation Plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Patricia will get us a copy of any written comments. Thank you, Scott. Kevin Godbu, Weyerhaeuser.
Good morning, members of the board. My name is Kevin Godbu of the Weyerhaeuser Company. Thanks for the opportunity to comment. I was thinking about the last meeting, and at that last meeting I asked you to act with urgency, and you did. And I want to recognize the board for, you know, taking a troublesome issue just in terms of the history of it and being able to put a process in place. And I want to recognize, you know, that AMPA and the group that he worked with to come in with the science panel report, and it looks like we've got a really good report that might solve a lot of the issues we've been talking about for years. And I think we're proud of the high quality data that we're able to pull together and get into the process, and we think it's really good information and it is sufficient for decision making. There's always that thing about the rule of central tendency or collecting more data, maybe you'll find something different, but I think if we look at, you know, kind of the information we have, and if we think about this in the terms of a validation study, I think we have enough information to act and get something in place. And why I want to do that and recommend that you continue to act with urgency is pretty simple. And why would somebody in the regulated community go to a board and say, you know, hurry up and pass a rule? And, you know, it doesn't make any sense. But the reality is we are having implementation issues out in the field, and this has been going on for several years. I just handed out to you just a little brief explanation of some of the water type modification and non-concurrences that we have. And you can see from a five-year period, 2012 to 2015, usually very few surveys were problematic. And now we've seen in 2016, about 7 to 8% of the surveys are being non-concurred. The same thing in 2017. So what we're really seeing is a breakdown in the field. We're getting, you know, people are hedging their bets, they're thinking something's gonna change, consequently, you know, we're getting stuck in terms of trying to get our business done. We can't get all these water type concurrences completed. And that's a problem. And the issues that we're hearing in the field are the same issues that this group just talked about. It's issues like you have to go to a permanent natural barrier, you need to go to the physicals, you have to go all the way up to habitat. If it's accessible, accept it. You know, those are not consistent positions with the current board manual. It's not consistent with what we're hearing from this group, but yet in the field, you know, we are stuck against that all the time. So we have about 50 or 60 non-concurrences that we've been sitting on for the last year or two in expectation that we could have a policy conversation and that this board would take some action and get us in a position so we could resolve those through an amicable process, or get us set up for a good field season in 2018, where we just don't continue, you know, this bow wave because we're have an inability to provide clear direction and a repeatable process to the folks that are doing this work and to all the agencies that are out there. So, yeah, I'll just stop there and say that, you know, the science report gives you a path forward. I'd ask you to, you know, act with urgency, get something in place for the 2018 season that would allow us to implement this new method. Otherwise, you know, our backs up are against the wall, and these aren't threats at all, but there's other administrative processes. We've already been to the Pollution Control Hearing Board once on one time, and we won that issue. If we have to start running through all those water type concurrences and go that process, that's the other approach. And then, you know, but we're better than that. And we've got an answer here, so, you know, in the spirit of moving forward, let's keep the pressure on. You asked, you know, for a product, it got delivered, and now it's, you know, up to you to kind of take the next step. And so I would, you know, urge you to continue this process and try and get something in place for the 2018 season. We need this clarity. Thank you. Any questions or time?
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
Board Member Stewart.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin. I wanted I guess two questions. You said 50 to 60 non-concurrent that you're holding at this point in time. Is that a comparable to the 28 and 2016?
Yeah, that's so the 28 is through 2016, and then there's a few others that have accumulated, and then we've probably got about another 25 or 30 that, you know, are either going to be submitted, that will be denied for the same reasons that the other ones were, and we think that that's the wrong decision, but we're going to move in that direction. So we're building up this bow wave of about 25 or 30, or about 7% a year. And in the past, it was always like 1 or 2%. So we still have a highly effective system. I don't want to, you know, leave the impression that the whole thing's falling apart, but you know, we're definitely seeing, you know, kind of this conversation we're having creeping down into all layers of folks that are involved in implementing this portion.
Can I ask one more? So I understand that, you know, if we move down the path towards a rule immediately, that would give you some certainty. Are there other ways to get there? Are there other things we could do to help you in the field so you don't have these potential conflicts?
I think there's the potential for a fast-track board manual modification. I mean, there's always been, you know, the dispute between being able to write a memo to the field, which is non-binding and enforceable guidance, versus, you know, something in a board manual. But if we could, you know, try to, you know, identify ways to take the new science that's come out of this and put it into an existing board manual and modify it and recognize other factors that will be coming forward, that may be one way. Personally, I'm a big advocate of starting a CR 102 today and moving the process forward and trying to get something done in place for the November, February timeframe, because, you know, the field season starts February 1. And in the past, we went back to 1999, 1997, yeah, we used emergency rules quite frequently to implement some of these, you know, shorter term things where we're betting on, you know, some other process to come forward. So I think there's flexibility here to get something in place.
Thank you.
Good question.
Board Member Nelson.
Kevin, are your non-concurrences, at least the ones that you're getting now, are they tied to standalone watertight mods, or are they watertight mods in conjunction with FPAs, or is there no real difference between the two?
We typically try to do the surveys prior to submitting an FPA, because when you're up against the wall, if you're doing it at the same time, and if you get a non-concurrence, then yeah, your timber sale may not go forward. So, not 100% that way, but we do try to get ahead. We try to have at least a year or two ahead of us.
That makes sense. I didn't know if all the board members are familiar with the project. You might also just kind of go through what avenues do you have in the case of a non-concurrence, whether it's a standalone water type or with an FPA.
So the process quickly is, you know, we do surveys and figure out what our engineers are going to need for harvest plans in the next 2 to 3 years out every year. We then identify those, we bring contractors, our own crew, we go out and we survey those independent, and then we submit a water type mod form that gets approved. And then when we submit the FPA, say a year or two later, you know, we submit that data. There's another process where you can, concurrent with an FPA, provide information specific to that harvest unit and go through that process. So that will occur if you're kind of up against the wall, market's changing, you need to do something quickly. And in terms of, you know, disputes, we've had an informal relationship with the department that department has an open door, and we can come to Olympia and talk to them about, you know, issues. And that's worked, but given the volume, the size of the amount of disputes, I don't think it's a workable system anymore. So we really need this solution in terms of a broader regulatory oversight.
Thanks.
Thank you,
Karen. Scott Squanson, please, from Washington Association of Counties.
Thank you, Board Chair Bernath, and thank you, board members. Thanks for this opportunity to comment today. My name, for the record, is Scott Squanson, and I'm representing the Washington State Association of Counties. I'm a contract consultant for them. I'm also the co-chair of the TFW Forest Policy Committee. And first of all, before I start talking from a county's perspective, I just wanted to applaud each of you. I missed the May Forest Practice Board meeting. I was just reminiscing with somebody a minute ago. I was in Scotland at the time, and I was thinking about whether I could go someplace else at this point in time, but decided that I should probably. But as far as I wanted to applaud you for making your decision in May to go ahead and take away this particular issue from the policy committee and move forward quickly. We've been working on this particular issue for quite some time. We were I was pleased that we moved as well as we did in the water typing process as we came forward with the recommendations that we had in May for you. And knowing full well that there are parts of the water typing system for the fish streams that needed to continue to be moved. And again, thank you for moving it to a science team that could get this to a place where we have more best available science. And that's where I wanted to now change and switch over my hat to the county's perspective. We certainly are very supportive of the fact that we should move forward with best available science. We think it's important that we do have these issues in place to move forward in this next year so that we have the certainty of regulation and better methodology to be able to move forward in water typing. And so we strongly urge the board to accept the recommendations that the science team brought forward to you on the potential habitat break. we feel it's important that you consider the fact that the data that they did have, although maybe it was not robust enough, it was what was available to them from the public record that they could use in a short period of time, and they felt that it was enough to make a recommendation from a science perspective to move forward and what the break could look like. And again, just to remind you that this is one part of the actual fish habitat assessment methodology, so that it just is able to move us to a point where we can continue to work to find where end of fish habitat is. I won't go into any further detail. I do have copies of our comments. I'll pass it on through Patricia to you. Thank you very much again for this opportunity.
Thank you, Scott. Jim Peters, Northwest Indian Fisheries Commission.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to come and talk in front of you guys today. I want to thank the science panel and staff that worked on that, and everybody that worked with them. First of all, the Washington State Tribes met and basically would like the board to protect, you know, the fish habitat of all their life cycles. So bottom line, I think that's where all of us are coming from, and we really need to do that. And then also, unfortunately, because the timber industry is one of the only industries that are regulated to protect fish, the burden of recovery is on the forested landowners. So that's why this is such a big issue. Also, this will, you know, picking the right rule here is going to secure our federal treaty responsibilities that the state does actually have some responsibility to uphold. The tribes, the Western Washington tribes, met just the other day. We're only able to have an opportunity to do that just recently, and they were actually looking at all those options. They were looking at they would go forward with the option 9 at this time, and also would support the validation type of study that people have talked about, because there is a lot of stuff in all the options that we have to verify. But we felt that the option 9 was an option that would actually protect fish, and then as that validates that, then in some places maybe that is a lesser standard to be meeting, because one of the things that we're concerned with and with our tribes was we have some tribes in some areas, geographical areas, that the recommendation will work, and other tribes they don't know yet, and that it's the low gradient versus the more intergorge, you know, steeper type of situation. So we want to be able to have some opportunity to talk some of that out. And this is my next point of being able, if you even if you make a decision today on this, being able to have the opportunity between now and your next board meeting to have our tribal scientists that have a lot of questions about it, and in some cases having a dialogue with the science team might clarify some of that stuff, and to the point that that's not a concern anymore. And in other cases, at least they understand how they came up with their decisions. Once again, what we want is to protect the salmon habitat out there, and I just want to thank you for the opportunity again.
Thank you, Jim. Adrian Miller, Oak Resources.
Good morning, Adrian Miller with Oak Resources. I'll try to be brief. I have sort of 2 points that I want to make. One is really an observation, having had a chance to sort of step out of the weeds on this process for a little bit, and maybe take the opportunity to reflect back a little bit. You know, I found the discussion about data this morning encouraging. I think it was a big part of what made the experience in TFW policy significantly challenging, is that we were talking about exactly the issues the board is talking about without the kind of data that we have. And at risk of doing a little Wednesday morning quarterbacking, I would encourage the board, as you contemplate this and other issues in the future, to utilize the tools that we have that would deal with many of the data issues that you're dealing with. There's a neat little organization called CEMER that does this pretty well, and I'll leave that there. Moving forward, I think whether it's a delay of 3 months or 3 years in terms of substantive action on this issue, I want to echo Kevin Godbout's comments about the need for consistency in application of the existing rule. While we haven't seen the degree of challenges that his company has, we certainly have seen a wide range of interpretations of the department's direction to field staff. Operating in a number of areas, most of the time we can work those out, but there needs to be clear direction. Until this board changes the rule, we're operating under the existing rules, and that message needs to be communicated down. If there are interim steps that can be taken, as what was discussed, we'll certainly participate in those, but in absence of that, the rules have not changed. Thank you.
Thank you, Adrian. Mark Goudier.
Hello, members of the board. My name is Mark Gautier, and I represent the Upper Columbia United Tribes. I just want to give the caveat that both Ray and Joe are here today on behalf of the Kalispell tribe, so I'll be speaking on behalf of the member tribes who are unable to attend. One of the things that the points that I just like to make is we've heard multiple times that the use of this FHAM is just the starting point. These potential natural barriers are just the starting point of where we would implement the electrofishing survey or the protocol survey. But what's also just extremely important to remember that they also are potentially the ending point. And that's why this is so important. And like the board's direction was, we're supposed to be looking at barriers that are likely to actually present a barrier to fish use. So with that being said, looking at a simple 30% reduction or a simple 5% gradient change, even looking at the data that we use that we've heard about all the caveats, doesn't necessarily reflect accurately what is a potential natural barrier. It's, if you look at how that data was analyzed and the allowable risk that was factored into it, and you compare that, it would actually be nice to look at that graph and compare it to the other opportunities that are more in line with our current default physicals, that actually their degree of accuracy wasn't that far off. And I think that's really important to pay attention to, because for example, in Eastern Washington, if we went back to that graph that was put up there and they showed that 7% change in gradient as that first potential natural barrier, and then the little footsteps went up the stream and they quickly encountered a fish, and then we went up about three more potential natural barriers before we made the FN break. Well, in that example, we have to consider the fact that what if a fish wasn't detected above that point? We would have stepped all the way back to that very first potential natural barrier. And in Eastern Washington, I just want to remind folks, we lost 1 million acres last year to fire. So the streams that are in that 1 million acre footprint, they still could have the upper watershed burnt and the lower watershed and timber harvest happening, and that fire could be impacting those fish populations for years to come. That's just one example. Our other one that is huge in Eastern Washington is seasonal variability. So there might not be a fish just simply because of the day that you chose to go out and do your electrofishing survey. We also have thousands of county barriers that haven't been replaced that are impacting fish populations. We've got decades of degradation, past harvesting activities, mining, grazing. We have fish barriers on forest lands that were just replaced in these last 10 years and fish haven't been able to reoccupy. We have temporary natural barriers, and then we have dams. And so that's why this is so important, is to actually settle on potential natural barriers that are actually likely to limit fish use, and we're not basing it on that starting point that has to be the presence of a fish being there. So I also, the last point I want to make too, is that's really important in this data set is, and I think we have to factor this in, is that these water mods that were concurred upon were the instances where something was in question. And what we don't have is there has been numerous protocol surveys, electrofishing surveys that have corroborated physicals and have found fish. Those don't get submitted. So we're not looking at that information when we factor this in. And then there's also many times where, just based on the landowner's knowledge of their ownership, where the physicals might have corroborated where fish were, and there was no need to do a water mod. So point being is there's thousands of examples out there where the physicals actually were accurate with the fish, and we don't have that data to counter the data that we're working with or to incorporate that into our assumptions that we're making. So anyways, I just wanted to point out some of those factors for your consideration when you're thinking about the options. And the final thing that I'll just say is, if we're going down the path of potentially doing a study, with the fact that for 10 years we've been allowing a single pass electrofishing survey that was, at least at the time, supposed to only be a 1 or 2 year remedy till we got to the permanent rule, that I personally don't see that it's that much to ask that we stick with, you know, one of the options that's maybe a little bit more protective over these next couple of years while we do that validation study, as opposed to creating a whole new system that, if you look at it from a field perspective, you're looking at a 5% change in gradient over one stream mile. You might have 100 times that you have that 5% change in gradient. So anyways, to me it adds a lot more complexity and difficulty from a field perspective. And so I just question why we would do that for a short-term fix if we're going to do a validation study in the near term anyway. So those are my comments. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks. Jamie Glasgow.
Actually, can I ask Mark a question before Jamie gets up?
Sure.
Sorry. Hey, Mark, sorry. Slow brain. So do you... can you envision specific examples where you feel like the recommended criteria for PHB wouldn't capture fish habitat in the areas where you work?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, we could go on at length about, I mean, we just went and resurveyed 4 sites in preparation to give the data to you guys to analyze. And even in those 4 examples, which we could pull out and look at,